when did I begin to kind of wise up about NASA? When I realized that when we put out good arguments, substantive arguments, arguments backed up by evidence, by reasoning, by papers, by logic, by evidence, and the critics instead would basically make personal attacks on me or would haul some straw man up and then, you know, basically try to blow it away, I realized that nobody could be this dumb. Certainly not people that made it to the most prestigious offices on the planet, i.e. at NASA. And it was when Stan McDaniel, who was a professor and epistemologist, who, for those of you who haven't brushed up on your, you know, Latin lately, is a guy who studies the science of how we know what we know, which is very important to this whole conversation, because there's a lot of assumptions people make, not realizing they're making assumptions in going from A to B to C to dismissing the evidence. So when Stan McDaniel called me and we got into a conversation on the phone, this was kind of before the days of email, back in the late 80s, early 90s, and told me he was going to be doing a report on the whole Cydonia Mars question, would I assist him by pointing him in certain directions? Would I give him contact people, info, NASA people? Would I provide photographs, which of course I did? As Stan was writing his book, his own research discovered that not only was NASA not being candid, but he caught them in outright blatant lies again and again and again. So it really wasn't me who was hard-edged at that point. This is back in the early 90s, 92. It was Professor Stan McDaniel who actually went on to accuse NASA when they suddenly lost Mars Observer just before they got to Mars, which was a few days after they received his full report, in which Stan had said that the way they were going to deal with Cydonia in the Mars Observer mission was about the most egregious crime in the history of science. They were about to commit the most egregious crime in the history of science. Well, it was at that point that I realized that I was not alone, that there were actually objective people who had nothing to gain, had no vested interest, no dog in the fight, as they say, who had independently, based on the evidence provided and the evidence they'd found on their own, had independently come to the realization that NASA does not tell the truth. And it's a terrible thing for me to say tonight, but Dark Mission is a compendium of countless examples of NASA not just fudging things or spinning things, which is the current term in Washington, but outright lying.
Tonight,
again,
I want
to make very clear, but let me finish this point.
All right,
I want to make very clear that 99.9% of the people that work for NASA tonight would be shocked if they were to hear me say that, because they're not doing it. They themselves are being lied to, and they don't have any defense mechanism because they have been inculcated from almost birth. Some of them have been there that long. That we're the most, you know, open agency in the federal government. We don't do things like other agencies. We don't, you know, prevaricate. We don't fudge data. We don't do this. And they themselves will be shocked as they go through Dark Mission and look at example after example that we document where they themselves are also being lied to.
Do you pick up Dark Mission from the NASA of old or the NASA of new?
We go back to the very beginning.
All right.
Very beginning. We trace it from its origins after World War II, the segue from the NACA, which was the National Aeronautics Commission, which was the premier federal research agency trying to get us, you know, up the curve of flight for military and civilian aircraft technology.
Right.
That then was transitioned over into NASA per General/President Eisenhower's dictum that we should have a civilian space agency. Well, the first lie that we have to confront in the book and on the show tonight is the idea that NASA is a civilian space agency.
Was it ever?
Never. Never, never, never. That's the first huge lie, which means if you go through the documents that we cite in the beginning of the book, the president and the National Security Agency and the Security Council and all of the alphabet agencies that basically are supposed to keep us safe and keep secrets from our enemies, they have under law a perfect right constitutionally to censor any and all information that NASA comes up with that would impinge on national security. And, of course, the ruins of an ancient extraterrestrial civilization fall right in that category. And so from the get-go, NASA has been compelled by law to lie to all the rest of us and maintain that it's not even part of the DOD.
Well, I can't wait to get into some of these structures, too. Go ahead, Mike Barra.
Well, I was going to say, George, the other thing is that if the solar system was what NASA says it is, which is this dead, boring, lifeless place with nothing interesting at all on the moon or on Mars, why would anything about a civilian space program need to be classified? Why would there need to be a requirement in the original act that created the agency that says, hey, the president and the DOD are going to have the final say on classifying any discoveries that NASA might make? They simply wouldn't have to have that requirement if the solar system was really as dead and boring as they've claimed for 50 years.
Mike, was there anything in the book while you were doing it with Richard that you two did not agree on?
I think there's one thing, and it was the wording at the end of one particular chapter, which has to do with President Kennedy. And I think it's a little too early to actually get to that part of the book, to tell you the
right
truth. There's a lot of ground to cover before we really talk about that particular conclusion.
Okay, but you didn't see eye to eye on everything.
No, we don't. We don't. And we will argue things, and we'll also argue about the priority of things